And welcome back to Midday. Thanks to our friends at the United States Naval Academy for this rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner. I'm Tom Hall. On this anniversary of 9/11, we now are going to take a look back at another time when America was attacked. During the War of 1812, we're going to consider the complexities and uncomfortable truths about a figure who emerged from that war as a well-known hero, not for his bravery on the battlefield, but rather for his poetic prowess. In 1814, soon after Francis Scott Key penned his poem The Defense of Fort McHenry, set to the tune of a song popular with an Englishmen's social club, it was printed on broadsheets and distributed far and wide. We now know it, of course, as the Star-Spangled Banner. There is a lot, however, that many people may not know about Francis Scott Key. A new docudrama about this enigmatic figure airs on Maryland Public Television and nationwide in three parts beginning tomorrow night. It's called F.S. Key, After the Song. Philip J. Marshall is with me here in the studio. He's a writer, a director, and the editor of this series. Mr. Marshall, it's good to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us what we may not know about Francis Scott Key and what happened to him after this broadsheet was so widely distributed and he became well known as the poet of this song.
Well, Key is a very interesting character in history. He was a constitutional lawyer and ended up becoming a political operative for Andrew Jackson. But I noticed in your introduction, you called it a poem. The national anthem, his song, was always written as a song and always intended as a song.
Mm-hmm.
That specific tune, but that particular tune had been used for 100 parodies at the time. It's pretty interesting.
Anacreon in heaven.
Anacreon in heaven, yes. And because of that, calling it a poem set to music was a result of an actual PR campaign at the turn of the century by John Philip Sousa, because the prohibitionists did not like the idea that a British drinking song was going to be the basis of our national anthem.
Right, the Anacreon Club.
They were pretty much singing about wide women in song in the original version, the Anacreonic song. So that's an interesting thing. And they changed. He just wrote this poem, see, and they set it to music later, which is, if you know anything about writing music, it's completely wrong.
Yeah.
And first off, Key had actually used the same tune to write another song in 1800 as a tribute to Stephen Decatur that Thomas Jefferson had given a dinner for, and he sang it himself, and where he got his reputation of being tone deaf as well. But it's pretty funny. But so it's an interesting thing. There's a lot of controversy and a lot of misnomers about this guy because of how history has treated him. But
and what are the misnomers then, do you think?
Well, as I say, he was very religious in some respects, a pious individual, and there have been whole books written about his piousness. However, if you look at religion and how it dealt with society at the time, in order to advance in that era, you needed to belong to the right church and you needed to have religion as part of it. And Key in his lifetime went through this extraordinary transformation of not wanting anything to do with his fame. He was probably our first celebrity too, which was quite interesting after that song. It's astounding to think that after he wrote it nearly 213 or 14 years ago now, this tomorrow.
Yeah, Defenders Day.
Right, Defenders Day. It was a couple of days later that he wrote it. Almost within months, they were singing that song in New Orleans at the Battle of New Orleans. And, so it had moved very quickly, and nobody knew how to deal with that. But he ended up using that celebrity to multiple ends, and that's what intrigued me when I did the first show on Key, which is actually running tonight on MPT. It was the story of Key's life up to writing that song, and this new series picks up a heartbeat later at the Battle of New Orleans and continues pretty much for the rest of his life. But that is much more fascinating than the actual song itself for him.
So since events like the terrible tragedy in Charlottesville, Virginia, a few weeks ago, a conversation about Confederates and Confederate monuments, including Judge Roger Taney, who's the author of the infamous Dred Scott decision. We've had four statues, including one of Judge Taney, taken down in the middle of the night and shipped off to a warehouse here in Baltimore, and around the country they're dealing with that too. I wonder how Francis Scott Key fits into that conversation. Here's a slave owner, fiercely anti-abolitionist, as you mentioned, worked closely as an operative for Andrew Jackson, defended slavery and slave owners. He once said the great political and moral evil is supposed to be slavery, but it is not plainly the whole, but is it not plainly the whole colored race?
Yes.
So where are we when we lift up Francis Scott Key?
Well, Key and Taney are an interesting thing, and it's really a terrible sin in my mind that Taney is being dragged into the whole Confederate monument thing. I mean, the monuments that everyone is upset about were built at the time of turn of the century for Jim Crow to enhance the Southern white position against, you know, keeping Jim Crow in place. That has nothing to do with
Roger.
Well,
some were built in the 1940s, too.
Right, exactly. And even to this day, they're doing it. And that's the exact purpose of it. And those you should be offended by. But Roger Taney, especially the one that was just removed in Annapolis, that statue was put in place shortly after his death. This is a man that was a founder of the Democratic Party in Maryland and freed his slaves very young. It was he and Key were the only two lawyers at the time in Washington, which had about half the population were free blacks, and they were actually going to court and defending them with different slavery issues, people claiming they were free and no, you're not, and that sort of thing going on. So Taney's got the short end of the stick. He was a ardent patriot and an ardent believer in the Union, and was our Supreme Court justice up until just about a year before the end of the war, Civil War. And to gang him in, that's the slippery slope we start going down.
Yeah,
in
but terms with of, Key,
Key is a very, yeah, Key at the same time. What you have to put in mind for this mindset of that era is that everybody believed this, North and South, except for the abolitionists, which were the ones that started pushing and changed everything. And Key ends up going head-to-head with the abolitionists at one point. And that's how my story ends, actually.
All right. Well, we will pick it up tonight or tomorrow night when we start checking it out on MPT. It's a controversial figure. We look forward to seeing the thing. We are out of time, but I appreciate your help. Thanks.
Okay.
Philip Marshall, he's the executive producer of National Productions at Maryland Public Television. He wrote, directed, and edited F.S. Key After the Song. It airs on MPT starting tomorrow night. Thanks to The Diz for supplying lunch for our guests today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. They're open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on the weekends. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow is Defenders Day, the day in which Marylanders mark the anniversary of the battle that inspired what became the national anthem. We'll talk to Matt Crenson, a very well-known political scientist, about his new book, Baltimore, A Political History. I hope you can join us then. Have a great day.